2 Samuel chapter 3. 2 Samuel chapter 3 and verse 15. So again, that's 2 Samuel 3 and verse 15. And it says, and Ishbosheth sent and took her from her husband, even from Phaltiel the son of Laish. And her husband went with her along, weeping behind her to Pahurim. Then said Abner unto him, go return. And he returned. This is again a very heart-wrenching scene. And of course, being a heart-wrenching scene is nothing we're not familiar with when it comes down to marriage today. We have seen some wild stuff when it comes down to relationships between two people. To me, I think a gay marriage is a heart-wrenching thing. Two people doing things they should not be doing, binding together in these. I think divorce can be a difficult thing. I think marriages where there's nothing but bitterness and fighting can be a very difficult thing. There's a lot of weird stuff that happens within marriages. The wife or husband runs off and goes to be with either their best friend or the best friend of the spouse, and just the horror stories that we used to just hear about on Jerry Springer. Hopefully you weren't listening much to that, but used to only find on daytime television, but now you see happening right in your very neighborhood. Just the weirdness that has taken place and continues to take place inside our society. As we see this poor man, the king has decreed that his wife leaves, and he's following after her, weeping and crying. And of course, among men's circles or our men's groups together, I've been a part of a couple, and they cry over, this is going on in my marriage, and that's going on in my marriage. And I get that image of them when I read this. Just, she's chased after her boss, or she doesn't want to come anywhere near me anymore, or she left and I don't know where her and the kids are. And these are very shocking things, and they'd be terrifying to consider, but they are very real today. When mankind does not get marriage right, people get hurt, and that is a hard line. These are people that we love, we trust, we want to have a part of our lives. But what happens when things aren't going so well, or when the breaking of God's ordination of marriage, other things take place? We need to seek God's way. And again, I instruct you, if you've got issues in your marriage now, if you had issues in other marriages, if you've been through divorces, this is not about shaming. This is not about putting people down. This is not about you feeling guilty about anything. We have to teach the Bible. And when we come across this passage, we have to pause and we have to look at it. Why? Because there are young people here who need to know the biblical definition of marriage. Today in churches, you say, hey, what's the biblical definition of a marriage? What is it that everybody says? The biblical definition of marriage, one man plus one woman. That is the headline. That is not the whole article. That is not the whole story. It is one man and one woman, but there's a world of things in the Bible to understand about biblical marriage, and they must be taught. Now, here's the hard thing. No marriage is perfect. We will all display, and many of you have most likely displayed, some bad practices in marriage. And we all get our hearts hurt about that. We all feel rough about that. I'm sitting here preaching to you this thing about kids picking up on bad things, and a list of things run through my mind that I'm terrified my kids might learn from me. We all have it. We all have dealt with it or are dealing with it now. What we must do is lay aside the distraction of shame or the fear of reproach and look hard into what the Bible says. We started off last week by saying that the marriage must be a covenant, one of leaving and cleaving, one of loving, love being a choice. Well, what happens if I no longer feel the same way? Love isn't a feeling. We talked about that. What is it that most people attribute to being love? Infatuation. The butterflies in the tummy. The stuttering in the voice. The blush on the face when we see them. Just the, oh, there they are. Hi. You know. Go talk to her. You go talk to her. My mom, in front of my wife, no doubt, my mom told me this story. I guess I've been embarrassing her so often, she decided she'd take a turn. She told a story about my little friend I met at camp. And I met a little friend at camp, and oh, she was adorable. And she started calling my house 4-5 times a day. Collect. There it is. It shocked me that was like 4-5 times a day, and you guys were like, oh, okay. And I go, collect, and I got the response. Collect. Wanting to talk to me, and my mom became very frustrated at it. And I tell you what, so often when we think about love, we think about that little infatuation that takes place right there on the playground, that smile that comes to your face with that one particular coworker that you ended up marrying, and all, you just get so nervous, and it's just, it's a hallmark moment. But anybody who's been married for any period of time understands that that infatuation comes and goes. And the more physical care, love, and respect you put into the marriage, the more likely that infatuation will come back or stay there for a while. Now, it's not perfect. It is impossible for that to take place one-sided. You know, I've met many a person who've moaned that they've done everything they can, but their wife or their husband just doesn't respond. Listen, you can't fabricate infatuation one-sidedly. It must happen on both sides. So love is a matter of respect, love, care, preference. Right? Those are things that we can sharpen, that we can put in there. And all of a sudden, behold, here will come this infatuation. Here will come the emotions and the feelings again. But those will come and go. When people put their decision to follow through with the covenant they made based on their feelings, they will leave when their spouse gets sick. We've seen that before. A diagnosis of cancer. Well, sorry to tell you this. I know you've had a bad day at the doctor's, but also I've been seeing this guy on the other side. Now that I know that things aren't going so well with you, I will go and move in with him. And that'll happen. Right? Oh yeah, by the way, this lady at work I told you not to worry about, we're gonna go run off and get married. These things will happen when love is attributed to the emotion and not the dedication of love, respect, proper attitude and care that it should be. There should be love on both sides. Now, what happens when there's hurt in the marriage? Then you must love harder. And that can be very difficult. And I encourage each and every one of us to reach out, to get help when we've gone down that avenue where it is difficult for us to come back out of. But we can never pretend that the infatuation is what love is. The feeling isn't what love is. That covenant that we make of the leaving, the cleaving, the loving is also paired up with honoring. With honoring. Again, it drives me absolutely bananas when people speak negatively towards their spouse. I used to not end interviews, but I have ended interviews in my mind with men who've made not jokes about their marriage. I think we've all got our marriage jokes, but have been absolutely insulting about their spouses. Just ended it. Me professionally, I go, if that's the way you're going to speak about the person you promised to love, I can only imagine what you're going to do with our equipment, what you're going to do with me, what you're going to do with the name of our company. No, thank you. These things, they are all choices. There must be honor. The husband must honor the wife. The wife must honor the husband. No trash talking. There should be no corner of your life where you can pick up the phone with your buddies, male or female, and dump trash upon them. And then that person, they come around the house and they're giving the husband or the wife the side eye. And they're talking terrible things about each other. Why? What'll happen then? Well, as we understand, in every combat and in every argument, there's always two sides. But did you know that there's often a third side? That third side being the side of the spectator. The one that sees everything and draws their opinion based off of a semi-part of the story. There was a church where a member was being brought up for exclusion due to verbal and physical abuse of his wife. And many of the members of that church had talked to him and had been around him and had very unbiblical views of how a wife should take things from her husband. And I won't go into details of the things that he was doing, but they were very awful things. Men, if I were to tell you some of the things that he was saying and doing and the ways he was treating his wife, you would have wanted to get up and gone and have a word with him. But there were men in the church who had gotten close to him, who had had conversations with him, so that when the conversation was brought up in a meeting, one of the men just kind of raised his hand and said, "Well, you know, she's never had a good thing to say about him. Well, you know that they haven't gotten along for a while, and she's never been very loving to him, and she's never been very sweet to him, and she's never..." And I sat there kind of flabbergasted. Men, if you're thinking of dumping on your wives, and you wonder why she's not being sweet to you, you've got a brain problem. I ain't talking about an excuse that the doctor would say, "Oh, well, you've got an illness." No, there's something touched in your head. Nobody wants to hug a cactus. Just saying. Right? Nobody ought to be out there petting alligators. And if you're sitting there and you're prickly and you're biting and you're mean, she ain't going to be sweet. You treat her sweet and she'll treat you sweet. Ladies, the same way. My husband is hard-headed and he's mean. So I tell you, what I do is I go and I'll do this to him and I'll be mean to him this way. We'll be out in public and I'll put him down just to show him who's... Don't do that to each other. Don't hurt each other. Don't be tough on each other that way. Show love and kindness. And before we jump onto the other sides and say, "Well, they do it to me," remember that you are responsible for your actions. God will judge you for your behavior. Men, do not forget that what happens in that home, God puts squarely on your head. You will lose rewards off of it. He will bring chastisement to you down here on earth for what happens in that house. You honor her. She honors you. Right? No ball and chain comments. No old lady, old man comments. No belittling each other in private nor in public. These things can be disastrous. And though I am sure we have all fallen short in one way or the other, we must recognize the danger and say no more. The covenant must be between the wife and the husband and the wife, the newly made one flesh with God. On our mantle for our wedding, we did what they call the cord of three strands. And there was one color cord, gold, it was gold, white, and purple. And I can't, for the life of me, remember, the romantic that I am, cannot remember what color I am and what color God's supposed to be. But the symbolism was, as the husband and wife wrapped together, it was braided together. One was God, one was me, one was Danielle, wrapped together. That is the model for marriage. That is the covenant. Me to you, you to me, us to God. Each and every one of us held responsible for our duties to each other by God. So that is the covenant. Now we must look at the contract. Man, it is difficult to consider the word contract when it comes down to marriage. Do I, as a Baptist who is particularly... how do I describe my relationship with the government? Distrustful. I don't particularly trust those clowns. So do I actually have to go down to the courthouse, get a marriage certificate, and sign it? The answer is yes. Now, I am one person, yes? I know I eat for three, but I am one person. How many wallets does this one person have? One. In my pocket. I know some of you might have a collection. I don't know. Some of you ladies, you don't have one purse. You've got many, but that's why I use the wallet. You got one. Right? You should have one debit card per person. One bank account per person. Some of us got more. You got a savings account, this account, that account. But you get what I'm saying. Your portfolio, no matter how diverse, belongs to you. Yes? If I am to become one flesh, it must be in every aspect that a person can be one flesh. I see some marriages, it's not only that they don't comply to biblical standards, but they are so far off. Right? Well, she lives over in this state with her mom, and I live over here in this state where my work is. That's not... When do you get together? Every now and then, as our paths cross. It's been a while. I see some of these celebrities, they live like that. Right? Or my favorite is the pseudo-Christian therapists. She's over here giving, 297 talks on being the biblical wife she should be, traveling all over the world. He's over there doing 297 talks on how a man should be, and they spend Christmas and birthdays together. There's a problem. There's a problem. We ought to be one flesh in a count, in a calendar, in all things. We are one. Now, does it matter if it's the United States government or anything? No, if there's any way to bind us together, it must be something that we do. Now, personally, I believe that there should be financially a family pot. Now, if somebody's got a secret Christmas account, as long as everybody in the relationship knows what's going on, what should never happen is a complete diversity in finances. Want to know why? How easy is it to dissolve that? Well, it's very easy. Right? We should be one in those things. Well, you don't understand how irresponsible they are. Well, that is, again, where we don't allow sin to continue on in the home. We address the sin. Well, they won't listen to me. If only God had created somebody in your life that could explain and give biblical counsel. Those exist. God's model for anything is not for you to continue on in sin and justify other sin upon its back. One flesh. One grouping. We should be one in that aspect. To where there's not private money, there's not private things. To be honest with you, I'm not even all that thrilled about y'all not having the same passwords to things. Anything that I have, she has the password to, or she can get the password to pretty quick. I'm not a very complicated creature. I've got a pattern for how I change up my passwords. If she's got one, she's only needed to try once or twice to get into the thing, and that's fine. Well, what about your privacy? Listen, I've got tons of privacy, but if I've got something I've got to keep private from her, and it ain't Christmas or her birthday, I don't need it to be private. I need it to be gone. Well, what if she... No, there's ways around it. Trust me. Trust me. Even when it comes down to Christmas, and here's one where I've got to tell on myself, my wife and I, for Christmas, we sit together. This is how much we're going to spend on the kids. And this is how much we're going to spend on each other. Do you believe I have absolutely never stuck to that budget for her? Just never happened. Why? That's what my dad taught me. My dad taught me that. My parents never neglected us, but my dad never failed to do his best to go over and above for my mom. We didn't have much, but what he could do, to the point where you'd come in and the majority of the presents were to my mom. That's the house we grew up in. Now you're sitting thinking, oh, that's an awful way to treat children. I don't know. I grew up and I walked away with a better present. You know what I mean? I lost all the teddy bears. I grew out all of the change of clothes. Most of those toys have been thrown away long ago. The rest are probably rotting in my mother's basement. Those are past. But I picked something up from it. We should agree. Now I go back to the real point. We agree on it. This is what it should be. If there's difficulties, we need to work through the difficulties. But we never create two where God creates one. Never create two where God creates one. We ought to get to the heart of the problem. I don't trust him. I don't trust her. There's been some issues. Well, let us examine those issues. Let's get to the heart of them. Because life is better lived without the issues. There should be a legal contract made before man where we stand together and we say we are legally joining together. Right? It is like a three-legged race where the two are not tied together. You are asking for someone to manipulate the rules of the game. There must be a contract. There must be two agreeing before all of man. This is what we promise. This is what we are. Now in our country today, there's a form you gotta fill out. They legally bind things together. I think that there are massive problems with the way that the government treats marriage. But for as long as I have the ability to make that public declaration, I must. Would we ever be offended at no longer doing baptism? No longer physically adding the name of somebody to the rolls. Hey, I want to join the church. Just don't put me on the books. Would anybody here be comfortable with that request? Oh no, part of the ship, part of the crew. You're in. You are here. There's no changing it. You must put your name on it. If you are ashamed of the gospel of Christ, if you are ashamed of the church that Christ started, you should not be a part of us. If you are hesitant to say, I have bound in marriage with this individual, if that is a difficult promise to declare out loud, you shouldn't do it. I say to a bunch of people who've already been married, but to you younger people, if you're nervous about joining stuff with them, don't do it. Don't do it. We put too much pressure. A child turns 13 and immediately every girl or guy that is spoken to, is that your boyfriend? Is that your girlfriend? You kids like it when people do that. Is that your girly friend? Is that your... It's right up there with asking a kid, how's school doing? It's summer vacation. Oh, well, must not be going all that well then. From 13 on and sometimes even younger... Is that your boyfriend? Is that your girlfriend? I'm going to say something. Not a lot of people have agreed with me over the years, but it is true. At 13 to 18, you don't need them. You don't. You've got one job. Kids, look at me. You got one job. Learn about life. Establish yourself. You got two, well, I guess that's two jobs. Figure life out. Figure it out. And then what do we do? The moment they turn 20, 21, 22, well, you better find someone. Oh, you better find someone. Creating this panic in a child that they must go out and find somebody reasonably compatible with that they can tolerate or that they can fall head over heels for, and they rush into the first person that gives them butterflies. Now I'm going to tell you something. The first person to give you butterflies might not be your person. That might not be it. There's standards. There's things that God says a man or a woman should be. That should be your list. And then, of course, you got the overly helpful relatives. They'll just hook you up with every caddy at the golf course and waitress at the restaurant. Well, have you considered this person or that person? Hey, maybe you should go over to another church and try to find a wife or a husband over there. Please don't go to Bible conferences looking for spouses. Most likely that's where you'll find one, but go for the sermon. Then what happens? They get married and nobody's got any questions. What? Who is he? Does he work? Okay. Does he have a house? Well, what a wonderful pairing. No, absolutely not. I've grown up and I've taught some young people. Some of those young people, they're getting married now. You know, I remember them being right here during Sunday school, crying because it's their first time away from mommy. And now they are out getting married. It really kind of makes you feel a certain age, don't it? It gets to you. But I have looked with great skepticism at the people they've married. I want them to be biblical because I love this person. I want that spouse to be a biblically adequate spouse. Not by my opinion, not by their opinion. I want to know that God would look highly upon their behavior. And that person's worth waiting for. That person's worth holding the standard for. I am looking for this person, and I ain't got to settle because I'm 23 and Thanksgiving is coming and Aunt Peggy is going to lose her mind if I don't show up with somebody. All right? We need to get over that pressure. We need to get over the satisfaction of, well, he's got a job. Well, this one came up recently. He's got a job at a church. What kind of church? We're just glad they're going to be in church. What church is it? Yeah, he's got a real future to him. Why are you dodging the question? Come back. You ever feel like you're calling for a cat when you talk to somebody? Calling a cat's the most useless thing. Hey, come here, come here. What church? Oh, well, it's a non-denominational thing over here. He's paid to run the lights and the sound and... What's the doctrine? What's the belief? Has he made a profession of faith? Does he love God? Does he read his Bible? Is he going to treat her right? Does he have a love and respect? Can he build a house? Can he nurture children? Can he raise them? What can he do? Oh, he's got a job and a house. Any fool can have a job and a house. They practically give jobs away nowadays. And if you got a job, a house ain't too difficult. All right, we need higher expectations. We are entering into a contract in front of all of man. So kids, no matter who's giving you pressure, take your time. And if you want me to rough them up a little bit, maybe even just for fun, you let me know. Ask them some questions, make them real nervous. You ask Danielle, I'm really good at this. Really good at this. I got in trouble one time, though. I'll just tell you this to lighten the mood a little bit. My cousin brought home a boyfriend. And I love my cousin. We're very much alike. She brought home a man who was Arabic. And everybody was being really polite. And I appreciate that. There's no point in being rude. But I do have a problem where I think I'm funny. So I'm asking him, hey, how you doing? Where do you work? What's that like? Where's your family from? Hey, that's wonderful. Ask him good questions. And then everybody else was asking questions. And he said something a little rude that I didn't like. And that kind of pushed a button that says it's okay. And you shouldn't do this. But I just kind of looked over. I go, now, Will, you know, if you ever decide to marry my cousin, will she be your first wife or your only wife? And I tell you what, he got real uncomfortable. My uncle turned purple laughing his head off, but I made him uncomfortable. I'm okay with ribbing somebody a little bit just to get him to understand. But I'll tell you this. Marriage is entering into a contract. You are legally bound to that person, and I think that is an okay thing to do. But you better make sure that the person you're bound to, you're okay with. I remember this. We had a couple come to us. They'd been together for 3 whole months. And they were going to move in together because they were progressive. They were in love. They knew each other. It was like they had known each other for forever. And they were going to get an apartment together. Now, apartment, much like marriage, is a legal contract. If the new boyfriend doesn't have his half of the rent on time, everybody's late, everybody's credit gets marked up. It's the same, and I explain that to them. I go, you and you, whether it was two best friends, newly getting together couple, anybody unmarried. I go, you're not married. But once you sign this lease, it's like you are. So be very careful. I will run your application. Go down to Panera Bread and make sure you're ready to enter a contract with this person. So they got approved. Everything was going well. He had a great job, great money. She had a great job, great money. Shouldn't have been any problems. 1 month into the lease, there were problems. I can't remember who did what. I can't remember whose side I took. But I do remember that they signed a 14-month lease. And they were stuck to it for 14 months. All right? You better make sure who you're doing business with, you're okay with. And that's one of the big things. Not only should you take that commitment so strongly and so compassionately, or so passionately, that you're willing to sign a document for it and be bonded together legally, but you should, again, understand that contract's going to last a while. You're committed to it. I'm committed to it. I ain't going nowhere for it. You know, some people, they spend years in arbitration trying to handle divorces. When I tell you what, they could have spent less time getting things right. Figuring stuff out. I mean, by the time they got done arguing over the car was done. The car was wore out. The house was falling down. They would have needed a new house by the time the arguing was done. It is better to fix the problem. We ought to have each other. If we're going to make that promise, if we're going to stand up before everybody and say, hey, this is what we're doing, we got to be serious about it, because there are implications. And if we love each other biblically, and marriage is to us what God says marriage should be, we ought to have no problem doing that. We ought to have no problem doing it. The money comes together. The future goes together. I heard this story about a guy. He passed away, left all of his money to the kids, left nothing for the wife. Now, they were married. They shared a bed. Everything was probably not going great, but all the time he put it all in the kids' names. That's not what you do. Well, this is family. When I go, it goes to her, to care for her, to watch after her. When my life insurance comes out, it comes out to her. Unless something happens to her, it goes to her. If something, I've got it set it up in different ways. You don't need to know exactly how that goes, but I don't mind telling you. If anything happens to us while the kids are still kids, they'll go over. The money goes over to my mom, and she'll make sure the kids get it for whatever it is that they need. That's just the way that it is. You set up your wife, you set up your spouse to take care. Our futures go together. The insurances go together. There ought not to be insurance policies people don't know about. The will ought to take care of each other. As we write out our directives, these things should be decided ahead of time. The kid's inheritance comes secondary to taking care of the spouse. Now, some kids today, they get too excited about the word inheritance. I love Danielle's mom and dad. They've told us, they said, hey, listen, if anything were to happen to us, we want you to take this. We want her brother to take that. And I kind of sit there and I go, because the fact of the matter is this, if any of those things need to be sold to take care of whoever remains, that is exactly as kids we're going to do. You take care of mom and dad, don't you? Do you not take care of mom and dad? You take care of mom and dad. And I understand that they made a promise since we were kids, but I'm not entitled to that. You know what I am entitled to? Taking care of mom and dad. As my right, my privileges, my responsibility, take care of mom and dad. So if one of them goes and the other remains and money's getting tight on the one that remains, guess what? We will sell something. But isn't that what they promised? I don't know. You take care of them. You don't get all caught up in the inheritance. Mom and dad need to be taken care of. Mom and dad need to be looked after. Now, some of you, you've taken care of your parents. You know exactly how it goes. And that is the way it should be for the younger generations. Do I have an inheritance? It doesn't matter. What are you going to do? Go off to the far country? Is this a Bible story? I don't think it is. What you need to do is make sure that whatever they have in estate goes to take care of them. goes to make sure that they are okay. And accountability. Accountability ought to be there. It's part of the contract. Making a public statement that we're making these promises. So that way when my friends see me not keeping up with my promises, they were there. They could put a finger in my chest and said, you promised. You promised us, you promised God, you promised that lady. And when her friends do the same, family the same, you promised. There was a preacher I heard, he was preaching hard against wedding bands. Now I understand that there's a pagan background to wedding bands. I'm not sure if you're aware of it. But it is not the worshiping false gods kind of pagan. It's just something that a non-Christian group would do to signify that they had made that promise and that they are taken by somebody else. So, but he was preaching against them because God didn't tell us to wear wedding bands. I like them. You should see from afar, this is what I've got going on. And he said, nowadays, it's an even bigger draw and a temptation for other people to come and approach you to have an inappropriate relationship with you because you have a wedding ring. You know whose responsibility it is for me to make sure that doesn't happen? That's me. The ring should say something, and if it doesn't speak loud enough, believe me, I will. And you should too. I'll speak up for it. Hey, this means you don't talk to me that way. I had a conversation with a lady like that one time. She just got inappropriate. I don't think she was taking it anywhere. I mean, look at me. But she was just talking kind of a little bit too comfortable for me. And I go, hey, you don't even joke with me like that. Tate, you know, this is serious. And that ought to be how we are. This is serious, right? It is an accountability. Our futures are bonded together. I don't get to write another future. She doesn't get to write another future. We got to start fixing things if we've got a problem with where we're headed, but we don't get to change things. This is a matter of accountability. And as we sign that contract in front of man, as we stand up in front of the church, should I have a church wedding? Yes. I'm going to say something that sounds really mean. If you are going to get married, you ought to have a biblical marriage, yes? And a biblical marriage starts right here in his house. Now I'll get this. Well, what if we want to do things in the ceremony that we're not allowed to do in church? Don't get married till you grow up. That's not very nice. But it is very true, and it is something a lot of people in my generation need to learn. Well, we want to play this song and the pastor won't let us. Then you need to practice separation before you get married. Because if you're compromising on God's things in the front, your marriage is going to have a hard time. Marriage is hard already enough as it is, right? But to abandon God in it, especially at the front, is to be asking for trouble. Right? Well, what if, you know, we've got this great idea for a beach vacation, for a destination thing. Now again, please look at me. I know we're getting late, but please look at me. If you didn't get married in a church, I'm not running at you. I'm talking about what ought to be. There shouldn't be a justice of a peace at a Baptist wedding. There shouldn't be a judge, nor a sea captain pulling off your marriage. It ought to be a Baptist preacher. And when a Baptist preacher like me looks at you and says, I need at least 6 to 10 premarital counseling sessions with you before I decide we're doing the marriage and we're doing the marriage in the church, that couple ought to say, yes, I will do so. Because we need to get some biblical understanding of what marriage is before we do so. It is not about me wanting to control things. It is about me making sure you have every tool you need in your toolbox before you jump into one of the biggest journeys you will ever take in your life. You need them. And some of us, we'll be married for a while. Some of our tools will get rusty. Sometimes we'll lose some of our tools. And what do you need? You go back to the pastor. Hey, pastor, can we have a conversation? I knew a pastor one time who met with them at 6 months into the marriage, at a year into the marriage, and 5 years into the marriage, just to keep things strong. How's it going? We having any struggles? And if you think about it, that first 6 months, it's a perfect spot to have another sit down. Because I'll tell you what, when you're newly married, you're not going to sit down and check in with each other spiritually the way you should. It's good to sit down with a pastor, somebody who can ask questions you wouldn't think of yourself. 5 years in, you're looking at children, you're looking at things becoming more calm and smooth. You've figured each other out after 5 years. You've gotten a rhythm going into 5 years. You've started getting into trouble with each other after 5 years. The honeymoon period is worn off. So what do? We sit down again. Now, that doesn't preclude us from hitting there. You know, the 15-year, the 35-year, the 50th year, we all ought to be able to go to God and say, hey, listen, Lord, sharpen my tools. Replace what I've lost. But that contract we make, we ought to take very seriously. What happens if we don't? Misery. Look at this man. Look at his tears. As he cries after this woman that was never his to marry in the first place. We look at Michal, she loved David. She loved David. It says in Scripture, one of the very few that talk about how a woman looked over at a man and just loved him. She loved David. But her father perverted the use of marriage and instead used it as some way to form bonds between two nations. That's not what God designed marriage for. To bond up families and bond up nations and to create trade routes and things like that. That's what Saul was doing. He was giving his daughter over to this man as a possession. As a bargaining chip. And what happens? This man falls in love and his heart breaks. And no doubt, I can't speak to how she cared for him. Maybe her heart was just as broken. We don't know. But what a terrible and awful thing we see here. A woman having been married twice outside of what she would choose and then be brought back over in the middle of the relationship. When marriages break down, it is a miserable thing. When children are involved, it is by far worse. All the horror stories I have seen. Kids being thrown onto airplanes, traveling miles upon miles, get a Christmas here, get a Christmas there, used as pawns in the arguments of their family. Hey, don't you know your dad was a drunk? Don't you know your dad was useless? Don't you know your dad was this? And then the kid goes over to Ma's house. Hey, or goes over to Dad's house. Don't you know your Ma is this? Don't you know your Ma does that? Hey, tell me more about what your Ma is doing. And that poor kid grows up a pawn in a game he should never have been a part of. It is despicable. You know how many broken homes we have out there? I saw a woman give a testimony. She said this, she goes, there are moments where being a single mother feels impossible. And she says, you want to know why? It's because it is. It is impossible. One person was never made to mold and shape an adult by themselves. Not a father by himself, not a mother by himself, but two people working together under the admonition of God to create a biblical human. That ought to be what we're doing. And instead, horrendous things take place. Children are used against their spouses, and it's so sad. Hey, listen, if you want to see the kids this week, if you want to call them on the telephone, well, we're going to just need to revisit this agreement and do this and do that. We have wreaked havoc on generations of children. And then we look at them and we go, what's wrong with these kids? How come they ain't getting married no more? Well, gee, I wonder why. I wonder why. When you sat there calling each other every name under the book and then tried to actively tried to make them hate the other parent, I could only imagine. We need to demonstrate and be better, because otherwise we're looking at misery. We're looking at pain. We're looking at messiness. Broken homes, broken minds, broken hearts. All of which are, for the most part, avoidable. Now, what happens if he beats her up and she ends up in the hospital? Does she have to stay married to him? Well, biblically, we ought to kill him. But we ain't in Bible times. We're in America, so he ought to go to jail. He ought to go to jail. And he ought to get therapy. And he ought to get counseling. What? It's really none of our... It is. You're a member of this church. You're doing nonsense like that. You ought to go to jail. You ought to get some counseling. You ought to get yourself taken care of and make things right. Well, what happens if they're doing this? Doesn't the Bible say that in the case of adultery, didn't Jesus say that under adultery you could get one? Yeah, it could. But you could also forgive them. Put some effort together. We could work at it. Now again, not to bring up old hurts. I'm not trying to wound anybody tonight. But the bottom line is, there's always a way to do things biblically. If the husband submits and the wife submits to God's rule for them, there's always a way. It is when one or the other or both refuse to submit to biblical directives and protocols that we have these messes. So when you have people getting together and they sign prenuptial agreements, could you imagine that? I want you to imagine getting into an airplane. And as you come in, the stewardess, do they call them stewardesses anymore? I don't know. They hand you a parachute saying, just in case. Right? You're going in for surgery. It's a simple procedure. They do 1,000 of them every day. Before they sign you in and give you the gown and the fancy socks you're certainly going to take home, because I know I do, they say, just in case, will you pick out a casket? We would then take the free pair of socks, go home without the surgery. Right? I'm pretty sure they probably charge about $200 for those socks. I take that back. So when we sit there, we say, I'm going to love you, honor you, and respect you for the rest of my life. Your future is my future. We will be together till we're dirt. But first, let's sign this piece of paper saying how much money I get just in case it don't. Why? Let's pre-make an arrangement as to who gets the kids. That's faithless. Why would I... In a world where we're humanists and we believe that man is our solution, get the prenup. Pick out the casket. Get the parachute. In a world where biblical principles can be trusted and will work if we both submit to it, there should be no prenup. There should be no prior agreements. There should be no, well, I'm going to keep the house just in case the first year of marriage doesn't work out. There is no, well, we're going to live together for a while. What Brother Gill used to call shacking up. That was one of my favorite parts of Sunday school class when he'd refer to people in the Bible as shacking up. You know? It's like she had this many husbands, and the one she was with, she was shacking up with. And he'd say it just like, they would make me laugh. Don't shack up. If you're going to be having marital behavior, you just might as well get married. Because there's heartaches that come with that, but that's a sermon for another day. If we're going to come together, and we ought to come together. Well, they're just my friend that they live over there, we live over here, but man, we just love each other, and they're my forever Valentine. They're my forever wedding date. We'll be together forever. Then throw a ring on it and knock it off. Right? I know kids that talk like that all the time. I love them so much, but we just have to wait till... Just get married. Get over with. I'm not a marriage person. My parents messed me up. Well, now that you've acknowledged that, submit to God. Get married. Don't do what they did. You know, I always tell that to young people. My parents, this or that. The moment you realize your parents boneheaded up, now you can no longer claim you don't know that's wrong. And now you can change. Nobody ever taught me this. I had to figure it out on my own. Good. You're always responsible, but now you know. It's beautiful. It's magic time. There you go. Oh my. If we're going to do this, there ought to be a contract. There ought to be a covenant. Barring anything else. We do anything else. Not barring, but we do anything else. We stray, we use our imagination, we try to take a shortcut. You are looking at a hot mess. I told a young couple one time, they're about to get married. And I stumbled across a few things in talking to them because they were asking my advice. And I stumbled across a couple things. I said, whoa, you should hold off. You should hold, you got to get this right first. And you really need to address this. And what's your plan? You know, you both work at Taco Bell part-time, 5 hours a week. You don't have a place to live. You don't have any, your budget is pretty much putting an onion ring on her hand. Like, hold on. No, we love each other. Did you know that you can't love your way out of disobedience to God? Did you know that if you both jump off a cliff holding hands, that ain't going to be enough to stop you from being crashed up against the side of the thing? We need good, solid wisdom and principles. Don't listen to Disney either. I can think with my head, or I can think with my heart. If you're thinking out of this pumping organ here, right? If we actually believe a dream is a wish your heart makes, we need to stop talking in code around you. It all comes from right here. You could love someone with all your heart, all your mind, right? And still do some wise things. They're not exclusive of each other. They're not opposite sides of the magnet like they teach you on those life. Do they still have Lifetime? Don't tell me that. Don't tell me. If they still have Lifetime movies or not. Listen, your heart, your head will get you in trouble. Follow your heart. It's the same deal. And you can be wise and have every bit that love gives you. And you can love to the full extent of your heart and still be able to be wise. It is not a choice of one or the other. As a matter of fact, if you truly love that other individual, you will apply every bit of wisdom God gave you, every bit of knowledge God gave you, every bit of good stewardship He teaches in His Word. We apply all those things. Why? Because I love them. Because I care for them. Because I want to be there for them. Right? Let's pray. Heavenly Father, Lord, marriage is a forgotten thing. But Father, I pray that it only be forgotten by those it was never given to in the first place. Lord, help us as your people to stand firm on your definition of marriage. One that goes beyond just male and female. Oh, it should be that. I never thought we'd live to see the day where we would have to defend it until we began to legalize gay marriage. But Father, now you can marry anything you want legally. But Father, in your eyes, there's but one marriage. And Lord, I pray that we work hard at our marriages. And Lord, those that are young and unmarried, that they would take pause in theirs. Not rushing to check a box or having an experience, but Lord, to seek the right person, one they could knit their hearts to, knit their futures to, and Lord, that where they both could bless you. Help us, Lord, to do the best we can to be good representatives of your will and your way here on earth. For its name of Jesus we pray. Amen.